So Daksha Prajapati said, the 36th verse, Aho asado sadunam sadu lingena nastvaya asad akari arbakanam bikshor marga pradarshitaha, which we discussed yesterday. He said that you are simply having the dress of a sadhu, but you are not actually a sadhu. But although I am in the grihastha ashram, but I am actually a sadhu. And by showing my sons the path of renunciation, you have actually done an abominable injustice. Done an bhikshor marga pradarshitaha. You have done an abominable injustice. So I will just discuss something about the character about Daksha, and then we'll go ahead with the verses. If you see when we see Daksha Prajapati versus Narada Muni, Daksha Prajapati, he wanted his sons to increase the population. He is a Prajapati. He wanted to procreate more living entities. So he wanted his sons to increase the population. So because his sons became renunciants, therefore he became angry. So Narada Muni was actually interested in the welfare of the Hariyashav and Savalashvas. Narada Muni was, in one sense, more, we can say, people-oriented. Daksha Prajapati was more, in the sense, project-oriented. That means like he was interested in the creation project. So he felt that he lost his sons who can actually increase the population. So, for example, Prabhupada also, once Rameshwar Maharaj was telling to Prabhupada, he said that if we have to bring devotees every year to Mayapur, it will be a lot of expenses, and then the book distribution would also have to stop for that period. But Prabhupada was very firm. He said that the Rameshwar Maharaj said, we can't bring every year to Mayapur. Maybe once in 2 years or once in 3 years, a devotee will get a chance to come to Mayapur. So he was speaking from a more managerial point of view, but Prabhupada was very firm. He said, no, as many devotees as possible should come to Mayapur. So Prabhupada was not seeing only from an expenses point of view. He was concerned with the Krishna consciousness of those devotees. Because he felt that the devotees, they need inspiration to go on with their practice of Krishna consciousness. As for them, they need to come to Mayapur and attend the Mayapur festival. So, but Rameshwar Prabhu was seeing from he's seeing more from management perspective. So we can see from this aspect that Daksha Prajapati he was seeing mainly from the point of view that you will not be able to create more children. But Narada Muni was actually concerned with the Hariyashvas and Savalashvas. He felt that these people, they don't have to get entangled in the household affairs because they are already advanced. And therefore, he inspired them that way. Another comparison between Daksha Prajapati and Brahmaji. Radhana Swami Maharaj explained in a class. Then in the case of Brahmaji also went through a similar situation. When he asked the four Kumaras to get married and procreate children, the four Kumaras refused. Four Kumaras directly refused. So Brahma, he became angry because being absorbed in the mode of passion, he became angry, but then because he did not express that anger, because he knew that his sons were far more enlightened in spiritual advancement. So therefore he felt that no, I should not express my anger at them. But somehow the anger came out and the Rudra was born. So in the case of Brahmaji, that Brahma was not angry just because they didn't want to get married. The Brahma was angry because they were not helping him in his mission of the Supreme Lord. because Brahma's mission was also create children. So he was more seeing that as a service to the Lord. So therefore, Brahma was angry because they were not helping him in his mission, and getting married was part of that mission. But on the other hand, in the case of Daksha, if we see the in the case of Daksha, yeah, it was also a Daksha procreating children was also service to the Lord, mission of the Lord. But then, in the case of Daksha, he was more attached to just increasing population. He was, it's not that he was very much attached to the mission of the Lord. It's not that he was very much attached to the mission of the Lord. Like, Daksha was angry not because he was attached to the service of the Lord, but because of his material attachments to family. Because the reason is that in the case of Brahma, because he was more attached to the mission of the Lord, he checked his anger and he did not become angry at the four Kumaras, understanding that these people are spiritually advanced. But in the case of Daksha Prajapati, he actually became angry with Narada Muni. He is going to curse Narada Muni. So Daksha was angry not because he was actually attached to the service of the Lord, but because he was very much attached to the path of fruitive activities. I must increase, produce more children, and so therefore, when that hope was actually destroyed by Narada Muni, so therefore he became angry. So, in one sense, Daksha and Narada Muni, both of them are engaged in the service of the Lord. But Narada Muni is engaged in direct service of the Lord by actually propagating Bhakti Yoga. But Daksha Prajapati was basically into fruitive activities. But in one sense, both are serving the Lord. In that sense, both are actually God brothers. So sometimes, when one devotee takes up the resources of the other devotee, which are involved in his service, then there is a conflict. But in the case of Narada Muni, he had no selfish interest, as we discussed yesterday, of increasing the members of his mata or making more brahmacharis or sannyasis like that. So Narada Muni, that we saw in the example of Priyavrat Maharaj, how Narada Muni did not become angry when Priyavrat Maharaj was told to actually become the king. Another thing we can see is that Daksha Prajapati, although he was performing the service of increasing the population, but he failed to see the actual purpose of that service. The actual purpose of producing living entities, giving them opportunity to take birth in this world, is that ultimately they get an opportunity to perfect their life and go back to God. That is the actual purpose of service. So Daksha Prajapati, because he couldn't see the actual purpose of service, how Narada Muni was fulfilling the actual purpose of the service, therefore he became angry. So in the case of a Kanishtha Adhikari, he may forget the purpose behind the service, which is to please the Lord. But an advanced devotee is actually conscious of the purpose of the service. And the case of Kanishtha Adhikari is more attached to the activity of the service and not the principle of service. But an advanced devotee is attached to the principle of service. Like, for example, we have a glue and a tag. If you want to paste something, we use a glue, stamp, we use a glue for pasting. We use a tag, blue tag, which we use in the deity worship, putting the ornaments. So when you paste something with the help of a glue, and then later you want to actually remove the stamp, in removing that, the stamp may get torn. But when you paste something with the help of a tag, then you can remove the tag without actually, you can remove that particular object without damaging that object. So in that sense that the Kanishtha Adhikari is like a glue and a advanced devotee is like a tag. The sense that when Kanishtha Adhikari, when he is changed from one service to another service, he becomes actually disturbed because he is more attached to the activity of service and than to the principle of service. But an advanced devotee is attached to the principle of service. So when he is taken from one position and then put in another position without getting disturbed, just like a tag, the tag is something that you can remove that the particular object by disconnecting the tag, and then you put in another place and then still you can use it. So therefore, Daksha Prajapati, he was more attached to the activity of procreation, but he didn't see that Narada Muni is actually fulfilling the ultimate purpose of that service, of actually delivering the people. And generally, we should be sensitive in our service that like when we are rendering a particular service, it should not affect another service. In Tirupati Balaji temple, they were building a boundary wall to the temple. When they were building a boundary wall, they saw that there was one tree which was coming in the way of the boundary wall. And they wanted to cut down the tree and then make the boundary wall. That time Ananta Acharya, when he saw that these people are about to cut down the tree, so he felt so bad. He said, so this tree is actually rendering service to Balaji. Because the flowers from the tree were being offered for Balaji. So he felt that if they cut down the tree, that this tree will lose its service to the Lord. Then he somehow requested them, oh, please, can you please wait for a day? And then he requested them, please do not cut this tree. Please wait for a few days. And then he intensely prayed to the Lord that let the tree not lose its service to you. And then next day morning, when they came, they saw that surprisingly the tree got moved. It actually went, it went inside the boundary wall. It went a few feet inside. So then, they could build the boundary wall without cutting down the tree. So on the name, so that boundary wall is still named after that particular tree. Anybody knows that? I think. That particular boundary wall is named after the tree. Anyway, the point here is that generally a devotee, when they are, although they are rendering service to the Lord, they want to render in such a way that it does not affect another person's service to the Lord. Just like in the 10th canto also, at the time of Krishna's birth, so many auspicious symptoms were described. The apsaras, they started dancing for the pleasure of Krishna. Gandharva started singing. Many people were actually playing musical instruments. And then at that time the clouds started thinking that let us also do something for the pleasure of Krishna. And then the clouds, they started they started thinking, oh, let us start raining for the pleasure of Krishna, like an abhishek. But then they thought, if we rain heavily, we will become white and the universe, nobody will compare us to Krishna. So let us not rain. And then they thought, okay, let us start thundering for the pleasure of Krishna. And then they thought that if we make a huge sound while thundering, then the songs of the Gandharvas and the their songs might get disturbed and their songs will not be heard properly. So then they started thinking like that. The clouds started making rumbling sounds and they started making very mild thundering sounds in such a way that the service of the Gandharvas to Krishna will not get disturbed. That's why it is explained that mandam mandam jaladara. They started making mild thundering sounds. So generally, that means, this shows that they wanted to render service to Krishna, but in such a way that the service of the Gandharvas should not get disturbed. So it appears that Narada Muni was something desensitized, or he in rendering service, that he disturbed the service of Daksha Prajapati. No, Narada Muni was not such a desensitized person, because when Priyavrata Maharaj was persuaded by Lord Brahma and Manu, Narada Muni did not become angry with them. Oh, you are taking one person from my ashram. He did not become angry with them, because he understood that it is a desire of the Lord and Lord and the devotees for the mission of the Lord. So Narada Muni actually saw that what is good for the Harishwas and Savalashwas, and then he inspired them accordingly. And another thing we can see in the character of Daksha. There's a verse in Mahabharata which says that three things are required for spiritual progress: devotion to Krishna, and Atma Jnana, that means we can say knowledge, and Vairagya, detachment from family, detachment. Then, if these three things are there, then a person can progress faster. So many times, a devotee may have devotion for Krishna, and he may also have knowledge. We are not the body, we are the soul, etc. Theoretical knowledge may be there, he may be also be chanting. But then, practically he may not have practical renunciation. Means like one may be still very much attached to enjoying the body, one may have a very lavish lifestyle, one may be chanting rounds, one may have knowledge, etc. But one may be lacking in practical renunciation. So therefore, even though if a person has knowledge, one has devotion, but if a person continues to act on the bodily platform, if a person's lifestyle is very much in the mode of passion, then he will end up making some wrong decisions. It will also end up affecting his devotional service. That's why a few verses before we saw that how the Savarashvas, when they chanted the holy names, along with it, they also performed austerities. So Prabhupada emphasized that chanting of the holy name should also be accompanied by austerity. Of course, we say that bhakti produces jnana and vairagya. That is the greatness of bhakti. But then, as a sadhaka, we have to have a simple lifestyle. Otherwise, when a person's lifestyle is very much in the mode of passion, it involves a lot of sense gratification, then one will end up committing some mistake. One may end up actually offending a great devotee. And that is what happened with Daksha Prajapati, because he was to procreate 10,000 children and then 1,000 children, definitely he was very much involved in the mode of passion. And that actually, because of that, he actually offended Narada Muni. And we'll go to the next verse. So we discussed this purport yesterday, that Narada Muni, 37th verse, Rinaistribira Muktana Mami Mamsita Karmana Vidyata Shreyasa Papa Lokayorumayokritaha.
To the saintly persons, the demigods and their father.
So he is actually making the second accusation. Rinais tribir amuktana, my sons are not freed from the three debts. They did not properly consider their obligations. Here is calling Narada as papa, previously called as asadu. Now he is saying that you are a sinful Narada. You have obstructed their progress toward good fortune in this life and in the next life. Lokayor Ubayo Krita. Ubayo means in this life and in the next life. Because before actually allowing them to fulfill their debts, the three debts, you actually made them actually renounced. So the three debts are, because sometimes it is described as five debts. So here they are classified as three debts. Debts towards the forefathers, sages, and the demigods. So one actually fulfills the debts towards the sages by practicing celibacy. One fulfills the debts towards the demigods by performing sacrifice, ritualistic ceremonies. And one fulfills the debts towards the forefathers by begetting children. So essentially we find that, as another place Prabhupada explains that, just by the fact that you take birth in this world, you have debts towards these personalities. So in the modern world, people have absolutely no conception of actually, we owe debts towards people. So therefore, one becomes more individualistic and self-centered. And there is no, the idea of responsibility, that is not there. So, so now Daksha Prajapati is saying that, although renounced order is basically recommended for liberation, moksha. In Grihastha Ashram, mainly a person fulfills dharma, artha and kama, and then a person takes to vanaprastha and then renounced order for liberation. But Daksha Prajapati is arguing, but one cannot attain liberation unless one fulfills these three debts. And because since Daksha's sons had not liberated themselves from these three debts, so how could Narada Muni have led them to the renounced order of life? This is Daksha's argument. But the point is, Daksha did not know the final decision of the Shastras. So Daksha is a typical person who is just absorbed in the duty platform. Dharma Sunishtada Pumsam Vishvaksena Kathasuya. So he did not, he was not aware of the final instruction of the Shastras, which says that Devarshi Bhutapta Ninam Pitrina. So when a person fully surrenders to Krishna, then by that fully surrendering to Krishna, one becomes relieved from the debts towards all the other personalities. So Prabhupada says that Narada Muni was definitely right in instructing the sons of Daksha to renounce the material world immediately and take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Unfortunately, Daksha did not understand the great service rendered by Narada Muni. So therefore, Daksha called Narada Muni as Papa and Asadhu. But Narada Muni somehow tolerated. Narada Muni merely performed his duty as a Vaishnava, but Narada Muni tolerated Daksha's insults. So whatever Daksha's points were, from a dharmic consideration, and but he couldn't actually understand the viewpoint of the Bhagavad Dharma. So these three points are also explained in a verse in 84th chapter, 10.84.39, about these three depths. When people from Dwaraka and from people from all over the Bharatvarsha, when they came to Kurukshetra for observing the solar eclipse, that time they met the sages, and the sages actually speak to the sages are speaking to Vasudeva and others. In one verse, sages are telling to Vasudeva that a member of the twice born classes is born with three kinds of debts. Those which are owed to the demigods, sages and the forefathers. If he leaves his body without first liquidating these debts by performing sacrifice, studying the scriptures and begetting children, one will fall down into a hellish condition. So the debts towards the demigods is fulfilled by performing sacrifices, and you fulfill the debts towards the sages by practicing celibacy and also by studying the scriptures which are written by them. And you fulfill the debts towards the forefathers by begetting children. Or it's also, Vishnu Chakravartipad says that a person has three kinds of desires. One desire is to go to the heavenly planets. Another desire is to go to the another desire is to have family and children, and then third desire, he says. Mentioned that you can overcome the desire for having family and children by having wife and children, and you can overcome the desire for going to heavenly planets by contemplating about the effects of time. And then one more desire, he says, you can overcome the desire to but the point is that this consider what Daksha Prajapati is, the argument he is saying is right, but it is from a dharmic consideration. But there is also a higher consideration that when a person surrenders to Krishna, then all these debts are also actually, when a person fully surrenders to Krishna, then all these debts are actually relieved. But he was not seeing that higher consideration. Narada Muni had actually inspired them from the higher consideration. So that is a mistake. Even in that 84th chapter, Vishnu Chakravartipada writes that when the sages are giving this instruction, that they are giving this instruction from the ordinary man's point of view. But also, when we see from a higher consideration, when a person is surrendering to Krishna, then one can be relieved of these three debts, like that it explains. But of course, Krishna explains that, yeah, even in the case of the devotees, especially who are living in householders, even though a devotee whom we surrender to Krishna, spiritual master, in one sense, he does not, if he is fully surrendered to Krishna, he doesn't have to perform these, fulfill these debts. But still, for the sake of setting example for the common people, even in the case of a devotee who is surrendered to Krishna, he has to perform the dharmic duties. Because Krishna himself set that example. If you read Krishna's daily activities in Dwaraka, Krishna, he performed all the duties of a grahastha. In that sense, he set a dharmic example.
You said about grahastha devotees, like if they are surrendered to Krishna, then they do not need to follow all these dharmic principles. But what about brahmacharis? Like it is argued within ISKCON also, like brahmacharis, they are trying to surrender to Krishna, but it's because they are not fully surrendered, that's why they should still take care of their parents and, you know, and still do some of the Vedic, follow some of the Vedic principles, dharmic principles, because you are not fully surrendered. So now, how will you explain? Means I want to understand.
First, I mentioned even for the grahasthas, as I mentioned that even though they are fully surrendered to Krishna, there is no need. One becomes relieved of the debts, but still one has to set. Even though they are fully surrendered to Krishna, when you are living in a common society, you need to set an example. Therefore, you have to follow the dharmic duties, even in the case of the grahasthas. But in the case of brahmacharis, when a person is fully surrendered to Guru and Krishna, yeah, one does not have to do that. But on a practical level, yeah, many times, yeah, somebody may be having old parents, and one should keep that relation. One may have to help whatever one can do. Yeah, definitely, one may not be able to help the way, suppose, by earning money, etc. So that is, but still, whatever help one can do, one can help the parents. And yeah, many times, even when a devotee joins the Brahmachari Ashram, we ensure that whether the we inquire the parents' financial condition is proper. So we have to then only we tell them to get permission from the parents that the financial condition is proper. Then only we allow person to join. That's how we see that. So in that sense, on a practical this one, yeah, we have to we should not lose that human consideration. Yeah, definitely you may not be able to do the way others as a grahasthas do, but definitely we should do on a practical level, keep the connection. We may not be able to perform the like in the case of a grahastha, yeah, one is supposed to perform the shraddha. Yeah, shraddha is a way by which one gets relieved of the debts towards the forefathers. In one sense, if devotional service, one does not have to perform shraddha. But still, as I mentioned, living in the common world, one has to set a right example. Because Advaita Acharya, definitely he knew the power of devotional service, but still he performed shraddha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he performed shraddha. So in that sense, every incarnation, if we see Lord Ram, we discussed a verse in the fifth canto. So Lord Ram, by rescuing Sita, he actually showed how he is conquered by the love of his devotees. Lord Ram went to the extent of defeating Ravana and building a bridge and bringing back Sita. By that, Lord Ram showed how he loves his devotees, how he is conquered with the love of his devotees. But the same thing, it is also explained that same act, through that same act, Lord Ram is establishing how a responsible husband should behave. That a responsible husband should give protection to the wife and at any cost. In that sense, always the Lord sets the example for the dharma, and also he shows how he is conquered by the prema. Similarly, a devotee also should set the dharmic example, and also he practices sadhana bhakti.
Exactly. Just as you told that, in practical sense, the devotee should take permission and see the finance support of the parents. Uh-huh. And also, out of this, that they are going to join ashram in answer. This is better practical sense. Is it good for everybody? So, in that sense, here also in the Naradhan case, whatever the allegory idea gave actually to Harayasho, he could have told to get permission from the parents, or he could actually told to the Daksha, now your sons are going to actually, they are interested for that. But now fighting is going on because he is not aware of, his plan is mixed. What his plan is. So, finding that practical sense, why didn't happen that? And so, we have in ISKCON also, setting the example. Some devotees follow this principle, not actually in front of the parents. And after seeing the practical lessons, now the system changed. Some devotee preaching, okay, you want to join ashram, no problem, go and take permission from the parents. So we will not be, will not culpit. You and your parents decide. So two things happen. Even though, so here actually, why this principle not apply?
No, Narada Muni. So he did not actually specifically tell. He just spoke the Kuta Shloka. And then they just made the decision on their way, actually.
They understood, actually.
My parents are happy. So honestly, why actually, but we are taking, as you tell that whenever you want to do some service, you should take the permission from the authority, other authority, even though he's not that standard. So miscommunication.
Yeah, it's an important point, definitely. We see that whether, and even in the case of Acharya, Shankaracharya, or Madhvacharya, they took sannyas after actually taking blessings of their parents. Madhvacharya, the story, his parents, somehow he tricked them to actually give the blessings, and Shankaracharya also. Yeah, this principle is there. But sometimes when there is an overwhelming call of God, one is just inspired tremendously from within, one may act in that madness, one may not actually, when there is a, it's not a, mode of in mode of passion also sometimes one may do, but this is a overwhelming call of God. Then one may not actually able to see these other things. One just does something madly like that sense. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a verse which says that Swarup Damodar Goswami, how he actually takes sannyas. Which says that Swarup Damodar Goswami, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, I think he went to Varanasi and then he took sannyas, and then it is described that like in a madness he actually took sannyas just so that he can actually perform bhakti to serve Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a one-pointed manner. In that sense, it is in a madness. In a madness, he actually took. Sometimes when there is a divine call, one is not able to see those things.
There are other examples also which without permission they would have taken. Even Jesus Christ said, I have not come to, you know, make a patch up between family. I have come to create a confrontation between parents and the children. And just join me. And there's something like that. No? So, in ISKCON, I think in our temple, I know for some official certain reason, specific reason, we asked, started that thing, you take permission and then come. For so many years, it was going on like that. You come and join. And even in other small centers, it would be like that. You come and join. Who cares for, you know, permission? For certain specific reason, it was given, you know, you first take permission and then come.
Yeah, this is the official this thing, and also I have not found a specific verse, but we find a also like in the examples of the acharyas, especially Sri Shankaracharya, Madhvacharya.
Actually, this was when discussing. Somebody was telling that if father was what is his name, Rama's father. Dasarath. If they were like Dasarath, then we can take permission. But if they are like Hiranyakashipu, definitely we have to act like Prahlad Maharaj. They were telling that. Neither Daksha was open to discuss whether they can give the right choice, nor the current parents. So what can be done?
That's also a valid point. Correct. Next verse. Evam tvam niranukrosho balanamati biddare parshadamadye charasi yashoha nirapatrapah.
Prajapati Daksha continued, thus committing violence against other living entities and yet claiming to be an associate of Lord Vishnu, you are defaming the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You needlessly created a mentality of renunciation in innocent boys, and therefore you are shameless and devoid of compassion. How could you travel with the personal associates of the Supreme Lord?
So he is saying that you have defamed the Lord. And you have offended the Lord and devotees like me. And you have no compassion and you have no remorse for the bad activities. You have completely betrayed the trust of me. You have completely betrayed the trust of me. What can I say to such an evil person as you? The Lord became defamed by servants like you. You are without compassion. You spoil the intelligence fixed in performing karmas according to scripture. Therefore, you have destroyed the fame of the Lord. That means, he is saying that you have committed offense against the Lord among the Vaishnavas, among the devotees of the Lord like me. Therefore, the offense is therefore difficult to remove. So, we can see the power of Maya. Actually, it's explained that Daksha Prajapati committing this offense to Narada Muni, it is also from a spiritual platform, it is a result of the residual offense to Lord Shiva. It is explained somewhere. one of the residual effect of Lord Shiva's offense is that is why he was again cast into the path of karma, and he also committed another offense to Narada Muni because it was not fully rectified. But he is thinking that Narada Muni has offended him and the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada explained the opinion of the karmis. The karmis think that one should fully enjoy his life in the material world and also perform some pious activities in order to be promoted to the higher planetary systems for enjoyment in the next life. But a bhakti yogi is callous to the opinions of the world. Attitude of a bhakti yogi is that kaivalyam narakayate tridashapur akasha pushpayate durdantendriya kala sarpa patali protkata damshayate vishwampurna sakayate vidimugendra. That is the attitude of the bhakti yogi, is callous to the opinions of this world. And the aspiration of a pure devotee is that he is not interested in yogic perfection. Do the same verses Kaivalyam Narakata is quoted. So Daksha basically could not appreciate the service rendered by Narada Muni. He is saying that Narada Muni is defaming the Lord and offending the Lord. So actually, if you see, Narada Muni is so dear to the Lord. The second canto, 9th chapter, 2.9.41-42. It is said that Narada Muni is the dearest to Brahma among all the sons of Brahma. Usually, if you have a great treasure with you, you will give the treasure to the son whom you trust very much. Who is very dearest to you, whom you trust very much. So Narada Muni, the Lord Brahma gave the path of bhakti to Narada Muni because Narada Muni was the dearest to Lord Brahma. Whereas he gave the path of fruitive activities to Daksha and path of Jnana Marga to the four Kumaras. But Daksha Prajapati could not appreciate the service of Narada Muni. So you see that he is actually accusing Narada Muni by saying that you have committed a violence against living entities and still you claim to be an associate of the Lord. You needlessly created a mentality of renunciation in the innocent persons. So actually, when a person gets the inspiration to renounce, truly, in the sense, not in the mode of passion, but when a person gets a genuine inspiration to renounce, that is actually considered to be the mercy of the Lord. When Sanatana Goswami came to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after escaping from the jail, after going through that forest path, so that time Mahaprabhu said, Yete kahi Prabhu Shuna Sanatana Krishna Bada Dayamaya Patita Pavana. My dear Sanatan, please hear from me, Krishna is very merciful and he is the deliverer of all the fallen souls. My dear Sanatan, Krishna has saved you from the Maharaurava hell. He is an ocean of mercy and his activities are very grave. Means like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered that, he said that Krishna has been really merciful to you. That is why Krishna has actually relieved you from the intimate association with the Malechas. Similarly, Narada Muni has been merciful to the Harishas and Savalashvas so that they don't have to get entangled in the family affairs. But Daksha couldn't appreciate that. Nanu Bhagavata Nityam Bhutanugraha Katara Ritetvam Sauhrudagnam Vai Vairankaram Vairankarama Vairina.
All the devotees of the Lord, but you are very kind to the conditioned souls and are eager to benefit others. Although you wear the dress of a devotee, you create enmity with people who are not your enemies, or you break friendship and create enmity between friends. Are you not ashamed of posing as a devotee while performing these abominable actions?
Then he says that Ritetvam, except for you, who are the breaker of friendship. He is saying that, accusing Narada Muni, you break friendship between the relatives and you create enmity among those who don't have enmity. The devotees are always compassionate to the living beings, but actually you are so cruel that you have broken the friendship or you have broken the relationship between me and my sons. Therefore, you simply wear the dress of a devotee, but actually you do very cruel activities. So he is saying that such are the criticism that must be borne by the servants of Narada Muni in the disciple succession. Then Prabhupada says that, so we are in the Krishna consciousness movement, we are trying to train young people to become devotees and return home back to God. But our service is appreciated neither in India nor in the Western countries. So he says that in the India, the caste Brahmanas are criticizing us that how can you give initiation to the Malaychas and Yavanas? And in the Western countries, the parents of the boys, they are actually criticizing us. In that way, we have got enemies both in the India and in the West. Then Prabhupada says that, but a devotee is generally ajata shatru. He doesn't consider anybody as an enemy, but others consider him as an enemy. Other people consider, they're considering us as the enemies. But nevertheless, we should execute our duty. And if a person sincerely executes his duty, sincerely executes his service to the Lord, then one will be recognized by the Lord. And a devotee should be prepared to be accused by the ignorant, but must be very merciful to the fallen. One must be prepared to be accused by the ignorant, but must be very merciful to the fallen. So then Prabhupada also quotes the 18th chapter, Yayidam Paramam Gogyam Madbhakte Shabidasyati. Krishna's desire. See, a devotee should execute this mission of the Lord, and he'll be recognized by the Lord. So one should sincerely serve and do not be deterred by the enemies. And the devotees are friends of everyone, but they are misunderstood by other people. So then Prabhupada explains in this verse, the word Sauhridagnam is used. So actually Narada Muni and the members of the disciple succession, because Narada Muni and members of the disciple succession disrupt friendships and family life, they are sometimes accused by being Sauhridam. But actually such devotees are Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam. They are actually merciful to everyone. So therefore we can understand how preaching is a difficult and a thankless task. Because one will meet with many opposition, be ridiculed by other people. But a preacher must follow the orders of the Supreme Lord and be unafraid of the materialistic persons. So these purports are Prabhupada's also expressing his practical experiences. These purports. So he is actually accusing, Narada Muni is accusing, Daksha Prajapati is accusing Narada Muni as one who has broken the trust. I have shown friendship to you, but you have broken friendship with me. That is what the breach of trust. I showed friendship, I trusted you, but you have actually broken friendship with me. Next verse. Netam pumsam viragasyat tvaya kevalina amrusha manyase yadyupashamam sneha pashanikrintanam.
Prajapati Daksha continued, if you think that simply awakening the sense of renunciation will detach one from the material world, I must say that Unless full knowledge is awakened, simply changing dresses as you have done cannot possibly bring detachment.
Yeah. Here he says that though you think that renunciation will bring tranquility and cut the knots of affection, real detachment will not arise simply by your false show in which you bewilder innocent boys. So his arguments are in one sense valid, the sense, but from a dharmic point of view, just like when he read Shukracharya's arguments to Bali Maharaj not to give charity, he gave reasons based on the scriptures only. And he is also giving similar dharmic arguments, but then there is a, both of them didn't consider the higher level of the Bhagavad Dharma. Just like even in the Gita, Arjuna gives some arguments based on the Arthashastra. But the also Dharma Shastra are higher than the Arthashastra. Similarly, the Bhagavad Dharma consideration is always higher. So here he says that I recommend renunciation. Daksha is saying, I definitely recommend renunciation because from that arises tranquility of mind and from that comes cutting the knot of affection. How can you say, of course Narada Muni is saying this, how can you say your sons are not qualified for liberation because you think that they do not come to you, their father? It is not necessary for a renounced person to pay his three debts. And I have given mercy to them through teachings on detachment. So there is a verse in Jabala Upanishad which says that when one becomes detached, one should leave the house. But if the circumstances are otherwise, one can renounce from brahmachari life itself. According to scriptures, it is said that. But the Daksha Prajapati is giving a reply. Yeah, it is true that detachment is possible by the mercy of great devotees. But though you have bewildered the minds of these boys, and for 7 or 8 days they will show detachment, but real detachment arising from correct rules will not appear by this false show, dressing as a renunciant without having knowledge, or thinking that you are a pure Vaishnava. Though you think of tranquility, that will not arise since you are not a great devotee. So, like, he's saying that that real detachment to arise, one has to be situated in knowledge. So Prabhupada is writing in the purport, renunciation in full knowledge. Daksha was right in pointing out this defect. Beautiful point. Prabhupada says that Daksha was correct in stating that changing one's dress cannot detach one from this material world. So Prabhupada says that the sannyasis of Kali Yuga are more abominable than the materialistic grihasthas. In one purport, in I think 2.6.20 or something, at least 2.2 chapter, 6 or 7 chapter maybe. So there Prabhupada says that the greatest sin or the greatest adharma is when the person in the renounced order, when he actually indulges in some illicit sex or this one, that is considered to be greatest. So sannyasis of Kali Yuga are more abominable than the materialistic grahasthas. So Daksha was right in pointing out this defect, but he did not know that Narada Muni had aroused the spirit of renunciation in his sons. He couldn't actually understand that. So such enlightened renunciation is desirable, but one should enter the renounced order with full knowledge, for the perfection of life is possible for one who renounces this material world in that way. Even Krishna also talks about in the Gita about the renunciation in three modes. Dukkham ityeva yat karma kaya klesha bayatyajet sakratvam rajasam tyagam naiva tyaga phalam labet. He says that when a person renounces because of bodily discomfort, then such renunciation is renunciation in the mode of passion that will not last long. So, sannyas, once one devotee approached a spiritual master I want to join ashram. The spiritual master asked him, so why do you want to join? He said, because the material world is miserable. Then he asked, but what if you find the ashram is also, ashram life is also miserable? So then he became a little speechless, and then he went back. The next day he came, he said that, well, I want to join ashram because I can serve better here. Then he said, okay, that is all right. So in that sense, so therefore, renunciation centers on not on running away from the world, but running towards Krishna. So the main consideration should be always, how can I serve Krishna better? Or where can I serve Krishna better? So that is the consideration for making any decision. So, yeah, bhakti can be practiced in all ashrams because bhakti is all inclusive. Yeah, but definitely the focus on bhakti can be greater in the renounced order. Because naturally one will be is freed from all the other responsibilities. But if a renunciant focuses more on escaping from the world than on attaining Krishna, then he defeats the purpose of the renounced order. Because sometimes one becomes more averse to the materialistic life than to than developing the positive attraction or than developing or increasing your service to the Lord, then the purpose is lost. So therefore, and also renounced order renounced order also has a greater purpose than the individual progress. Means like it is not just for a individual, yeah, we definitely individual progress is there, but also a greater purpose in the sense that one person enters the renounced order in order to share the gift of Krishna consciousness to others. It's not just for individual progress, especially in the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's moment, one is supposed to be like preachers, share the message with others. So therefore, renounced order, one is also to share the knowledge with others and also to set example for others that Krishna is the ultimate goal. So aversion to commitment is not actually detachment. Detachment helps us from going from matter to spirit. But aversion to commitment is a weakness that keeps us absorbed in the matter. Aversion is nothing but another side of attachment. So when we see this, so Prabhupada explains that dakshas, if one seriously engages in bhakti, jnana and vairagya are automatically manifest in one person. Yeah, there is no doubt of this. Dakshas accusation that Narada Muni had not actually elevated his sons to the platform of knowledge was not factual. But all the sons of Prajapati Daksha had first been raised to the platform of jnana and had then automatically renounced this world. So Narada Muni, he actually gave the knowledge. Then they got the knowledge, then they naturally renounced. So unless one's knowledge is awakened, renunciation cannot take place. For without elevated knowledge, one cannot give up attachment for material enjoyment. So there is a famous quote of Prabhupada, maybe somebody knows this famous letter of Prabhupada, where Prabhupada says that, he's telling to some leaders, so make sure that our devotees read our books every day, maybe 2 hours or 3 hours. Otherwise, if they don't read our books, they'll not be able to sustain their renounced order. They'll eat, sleep, and fall down. So another similar quote is also there. Yes.
Renunciation, which is not. It's not running away from the material frustration or something. It is not running towards Krishna. But Lord Krishna says himself in the Bhagavad Gita, Artho Artharthi. Artho, one who is distressed, he comes to the Lord. How we can reconcile this?
He comes to Krishna. But this is about especially taking the renounced order. That is in principle of anybody in distress, he comes to Krishna. That's not talking about in particular renounced order. But the renounced order in one sense, not because the outside life is miserable, but basically one should have positive attraction. Otherwise it cannot be sustained. Because even in the renounced order one may find some difficulties like that. So Artha is, that is talking about four kinds of people coming to Krishna. The renounced order. Yeah, one may have certain difficulties and then renounce. But then, that is not the main consideration. Main consideration is the development of knowledge. A positive this thing. Otherwise, one may find the world miserable even in the ashram also. And then one will think, oh, again, where to run? Because he has a little short-term goal. Well, again, actually, Artha and Artharthi, they have a short-term goal, so therefore they may again, after fulfilling their goals, then they may stop worshipping Krishna.
In the proper way, and you know, again, then the obviously devotee responsible as compared to the neophyte, unknown person, doesn't know actually anything. It looks like good actually, but changing the things actually and very nice, prasadam and everything is, and low reeks of you know, service or whatever. But yes, devotee responsible in that sense.
Yeah, see, sometimes. devotees, there is both people, in the sense, ultimately the free will is there with the person also. And sometimes, somebody is preaching maybe more towards making people brahmachari ashram or something. But that's not, one has to properly balance that. One has to educate, basically we have to teach people in Bhagavad Dharma. And let them choose how they want to practice Bhagavad Dharma. So responsibility, we cannot generalize that everyone is doing that. Sometimes in the initial days of the movement, sometimes there are people, the preaching was little, maybe in the fanatical mood or something. Like once Devamrita Maharaj gave a class, I think in Prahlad Maharaj, one of the prayers that Kandu Vayena. Yen Maitunadi Grahamaidu Sukham Hitucham. So he said the same words if I were to give Bhagavatam class some 15 years back, we would be speaking differently. But now, after 15-20 years have passed, so now we give a little balanced presentation. Now it's a little much different from what we spoke 15-20 years back. And sometimes when the devotees were in the initial days or something, sometimes one becomes a little fanatical and this thing. But they grow over a period of time, then they understand, go through a balanced preparation. But like, if you see, there is a truth and dakshas. This one, I read a beautiful article in regards to like making people renunciants. It's like just like for example, sometimes before the season comes, we find some good mangoes. Before the mango season comes, sometimes we find a good ripe mangoes in the market. But usually those mangoes are chemically injected mangoes. They may look nice, they may taste nice, but differentially they are artificially ripened and they are basically toxic mangoes. They will be unhealthy for the body. So sometimes similar phenomenon encompasses the other aspects of life, from creating saints to soldiers. And maybe other aspect also. For instance, like one can easily expedite the cultivation of a saint. In one sense, Daksha is making the same accusation against Narada Muni, but he did not know that Narada Muni had actually aroused the spirit of knowledge and this one. But his point is valid from one point. One can easily expedite the cultivation of a saint, just like with a mango, one can expedite the, like one can ripen the mango before the time by injecting some chemicals. But whenever we inject the chemicals, it will be unhealthy for the person who eats. So similarly, when we expedite the cultivation of a saint, it will be unhealthy for that person and also whoever is interacting with them. So therefore, yeah, effectively the nature's law is that everything has a perfect timing to ripen. So even though there are some occurrences where nature's timings may seem too large for some, it is still excellent timing. Like for example, it is said traditionally some art of pottery. It is said that some traditional potters, they would actually soak the oil and water, they will soak the soil in water which will be used for pottery, and then that will be put maybe under the ground or some particular this one, and that will be used by one generation later. And then when they use that soil, then they will be able to make very strong, durable pots. But if a person thinks, oh, I can't wait for such a long time, I'll just soak and then make immediately. You'll be able to make pot, but it will not be durable. So it is only after enough time. Yeah. And similarly, if we see in the making of a soldier also, if you ask some Air Force pilot training, suppose there are some 20 seats, 20 vacancies are available. Some 100 people have applied. Out of that, only some 10 people got selected. But 10 people got selected. So then what they will do is that they will keep the 10 seats vacant only. They will not say that, oh, because we need more 10 people, let us admit even those people who are not qualified. They don't do that actually. So similarly, that in the case of when we artificially expedite something when somebody is not qualified, in the long run, it will not be good for that person. It will also be may not be good for the surroundings also. So therefore, the principle is there that one should not artificially ripen the mango. So therefore, good intentions alone cannot guarantee the success of an endeavor. You may have the good intention. Oh, I want to make him. I want to take him back to Godhead within. We have good intention, but then still the timing and rigor are of utmost importance to build something true to its purpose. So impatient efforts toxically affect the system, as does eating chemically ripened mangoes. So naturally, if earthenware requires so much of time to be fully ready, then what to speak of human qualities? Especially we are talking about the principle of detachment. How can they appear so suddenly? How much more time must be required for the training and education? So therefore, Mahabharata says that if anyone wants to walk the path of perfection, then he must consider its many components. There are 5 components are there which are required in the path of perfection. First is studying under the able guru. Studying under the, because this is also important, because many times people want to jump into preachers, but without actually studying under. Prabhupada writes many places, So when a person hears properly, then it will naturally be inspired to preach. So it is good, it is important that we create a solid foundation, although it may be a little austere, studying and hearing. But when you go through that austerity, then it creates a good foundation for actually for preaching. So one aspect is studying under an able guru, and then self-study of the Shastra, which we also study on our own. And third is performing sadhana, having a morning program and doing over 16 rounds. And then even after doing these three things, you still need, you need the mercy of the Supreme Lord, the Daiva factor. And then the fifth is the time aspect. You have to wait for the timing also. You may do these things, but the mercy of the Lord will come at a particular time. When you consistently do study under a guru, do your sadhana and perform your self-study, mercy of the Lord, you have to wait for the timing of the Lord. So therefore, just like in a mango also, any fruit, you water the tree, etc., it will come at a particular time. You work hard for that, you keep watering, etc. So these factors naturally ripen the fragrant mango like a student, preparing him to offer real sweetness to the society. So therefore, if we see the example of the Pandavas were born naturally, respecting the element of time. But the Kauravas were born prematurely. You know the story that when Gandhari came to know that Kunti had given birth to Yudhishthir, so she felt that she wanted her son to be the king, so therefore she actually striked her body. So then, as a result of that, they broke into 100 pieces and then 100 children were born. So they were born prematurely. So they were born prematurely and forced and compelled by Gandhari. The Kauravas were many in number. Many in number, but they were half ripened and rotten within and without. So do we want to be naturally ripened or by delusional artificial methods? So like that.
Regarding this ripening time factor, sometimes devotees or preachers quote that Prabhupada asked devotees, you know, spirit of renunciation is not there, actually you have to gamble one life. This life you gamble for Krishna. So you may become successful. And what is wrong in becoming a failure? It's not a loss for you. So in that way, sometimes they convince. Actually, this kind of factors are, I mean, this kind of convincing points are required only for those who are not, I mean, not showing a sign of renunciation, are not very much sure. So some of them are attracted naturally, and for them there is no show of joining or dedicating. The others, they have a, you know, here and there, this thing. So this, always they quote, gambling, Prabhupada says, you gamble this life, no problem, no loss.
No, that's why one thing is that, when we talk about Prabhupada's statements, so many things Prabhupada has said. And Prabhupada, many times he dealt in the case of emergency. He needed, he wanted to, in a short time, he wanted to spread Mahaprabhu's mission. He sent even the Grihastha disciples for preaching. So sometimes, when the Juhu land problem was going on, at one time he told, Prabhupada was in Ahmedabad or something, and he called Vishakha Mataji. He sent a letter to Vishakha Mataji, you go and give this letter to the devotees in Juhu, basically not to cancel the deed. That time Prabhupada said, I know that this is not actually, you are not supposed to render this service, because I am not supposed to tell you to do this, because this is an emergency, I am telling you like this. Many times Prabhupada did something in the emergency, but even in Prabhupada's statements, we find other things, like for example, Prabhupada knew that some people are not fit for sannyas, but still he encouraged them to take sannyas, because he wanted preachers and knew, he gave them sannyas. Like there was one devotee, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and then he saw some devotees were roaming in the courtyard. Then he saw that who are them? One devotee called Paramahamsa Das. And then he said, I want to just roam in India, so I came here. And he said, Prabhupada said, why don't you take sannyas? And then he gave sannyas, he became Paramahamsa Swami. So the Shrutakriti Prabhu narrates about that. He was also surprised how, without asking, he just gave sannyas. So sometimes Prabhupada did like that, but Prabhupada also said in other times, if we see 1976-77, when some sannyasis fell down, so Prabhupada said, so to become a Vaishnava is not so easy. It's not ordinary. So therefore we need to establish Varnashram. So Varnashram Dharma is required for actually to become Vaishnava. Like that he mentioned, there is a conversation. So, therefore, one of the thing Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains is that one of the cause of deviation is that when Acharya makes some statement in a particular context, in a particular emergency, in a particular context, so when we generalize that statement for all time, then that becomes the cause of actually deviation. He writes in Sajjan Toshini magazine. So we have to see that sense. At least I won't. We have to see in the case of Narada Muni, he saw that these people were very purified. Therefore, he inspired them that way. So in that way. Otherwise, shouldn't do that. Next verse. Nanubuyana janati puman vishaya tikshnatam nirvidyate swayam tasman natata binnadiparai.
Material enjoyment is indeed the cause of all unhappiness, but one cannot give it up unless one has personally experienced how much suffering it is. Therefore, one should be allowed to remain in so-called material enjoyment while simultaneously advancing in knowledge to experience the misery of this false material happiness. Then, without help from others, one will find material enjoyment detestful. Those whose minds are changed by others do not become as renounced as those who have personal experience.
So it's very valid argument. He says that without experiencing the grahastha ashram, without experiencing the material enjoyment, a person will not know the pains of material enjoyment. And from that experience, he will naturally become detached. A person whose mind is torn by others' ideas, a person who is brainwashed by others, will not become detached. That's what Daksha is saying. So, you see, there are three types of vairagya. One is abhava vairagya. Abhava vairagya means detachment of non-availability. Because I renounce 1 crore rupees. First of all, where are you having 1 crore rupees? Like, detachment of non-availability. And another is the smashana vairagya, detachment at a crematorium. Once a person comes out of the crematorium, then a person actually forgets that experience only. And the third is called as prasava vairagya, or it is called as prasuti vairagya, or detachment during the childbirth. Detachment during the childbirth. So, generally a woman, at the time of the childbirth, she says, oh, I will not become pregnant again. But then, of course, this analogy, the current time, most people have only one child. But that's because of some other. But people still enjoy, but they just want to have one child. Like that. But here, what Prabhupada, previously people would have many children. So Prabhupada is saying that generally women has at the time of the childbirth, she sees that, oh, I will not have another child. But then she again becomes pregnant, she gives birth to more children. So Prabhupada says that this shows that sex enjoyment is very strong. It's very strong. It's so strong that a woman becomes pregnant and suffers at the time of childbirth, but she becomes pregnant again despite her experience. So therefore, this Daksha's point is not completely valid. Daksha's point is that when you experience the pain, one will become renounced. But this is not the case in the case of a pregnant woman. She experiences the pain, but still she again becomes pregnant. After understanding the suffering arising from enjoyment, he will become naturally detached. A person whose intelligence is taunt by others like you will not become naturally detached. And that is what Daksha is saying. So Prabhupada says that the power of Maya, material nature, is so strong that although a man suffers at every step, he will not cease his attempts to enjoy. Tripyanti neha kripana bahudukka bhaja. It's a verse which comes in 7th canto, I think 11th chapter. That is Prahlad Maharaj, this one. But this another verse, 7th canto, 11th chapter. Sometimes when a person enjoys material sense gratification, one may become detached. Just like when you have when the fire is blazing, and then when you put a huge quantity of ghee, it can become, there is a chance that it can become extinguished. So, there is a chance, but the point which is, but generally, many times people get entangled in that. Under the circumstances, unless one gets the association of a devotee like Narada Muni or a servant in the disciple succession, one's a dormant spirit of renunciation cannot be awakened. So here Prabhupada is saying is that blessing of a devotee is needed. Simply by experience of miseries, one cannot be detached. The experience of miseries can give certain detachment temporarily, but that is not the... That is only one small consideration. One has to get the blessings of a devotee. That is why one has to practice sadhana bhakti strictly, and also when a person follows the grihastha ashram according to the rules and regulations strictly, then a person can become detached. But otherwise, simply being a dharmic person without practicing sadhana bhakti, one will not be able to detach. One cannot get detached. Without the association of the devotees and without the simply following the going through the experience, family life, one cannot become detached. So here Prabhupada is writing a beautiful point. He says that one needs the blessings of a devotee like Narada Muni, then one can renounce his attachment for the material world. So his point, Daksha's point, is that without going through the experience, they cannot sustain their detachment. But he did not know that his sons had received the blessings of Narada Muni and they have become detached. So generally, when the blessings can make the impossible into possible. So generally, it is very difficult to develop detachment without going through the experience. But when a person receives the blessings of a devotee, without going through the experience of family life, the impossible becomes possible. So these sons of Harish and Savalashwas, by the blessings of Narada Muni, they developed a true detachment even without going through the experience of the family life. That's also we can say. That's also in different. These three are mentioned in some context, some Niti Shastra. Markata Vairagya, Phalgu Vairagya. That's all. Markata Vairagya, Phalgu Vairagya, both mean the same thing. Sense monkey renunciation or Phalgunadi. Externally showing oneself to be renounced, but internally being attached. Yukta Vairagya, we also say. There's another. Which actually, which does not remain long. Abhava Vairagya, Smashana Vairagya, Prasava Vairagya. All this renunciation remains only for some time. So we'll recite together next verse. Yannastvam karma sandhanam sadhunam grihamedinam kritavanasi durmarsham vipriyam tava marshitam.
Although I live in household life with my wife and children, I honestly follow the Vedic injunctions by engaging in fruitive activities to enjoy life without sinful reactions. I have performed all kinds of yajnas, including the Dev Yajna, Rishi Yajna, Pitri Yajna, and Nri Yajna. Because these yajnas are called vratas, I am known as a Griha Vrata. Unfortunately, you have given me great displeasure by misguiding my sons for no reason to the path of renunciation. This can be tolerated once.
Hmm. So here he says, you can be forgiven once for causing such intolerable harm to a honest householder. Sadhunam grihamedinam. I'm a honest householder because I follow all these vratas, Deva Yajna, Rishi Yajna, Pitru Yajna, Nri Yajna, all these yajnas perfectly. I can tolerate this once. I mean, like, you first time when you made my sons renounce, I had been most tolerant and magnanimous towards you. And I did not take any action when you first misled my sons. I was very tolerant. So therefore, I am a greater sadhu than you. And you are simply dressed as a sadhu. So I forgive you who are unworthy of that renounced order, intent on doing harm to others. Who have broken the rules of jnana and bhakti for your intolerable offense. And finally, in this last verse, he curses Narada Muni. Tantu krintana yannastvam abhadram acharappunaha tasmal lokeshucha te muda nabaved brahmatappadam.
You have made me lose my sons once, and now you have again done the same inauspicious thing. Therefore, you are a rascal who does not know how to behave toward others. You may travel all over the universe, but I curse you to have no residence anywhere.
So he is saying that you are the cause of separation from my sons. Because you have created misfortune again by converting Savalashvas also into renunciants, I curse you that you will not be able to stay at a place permanently in all the planets. You will not have any fixed residence. So what Daksha Prajapati, because as a grahastha means one is situated at a particular place. Like he, for him, just keeping on traveling, that is austerity for him. So he thought, what is actually a austerity or curse from his consideration, he cursed that to Narada Muni, but that turns out to be a blessing for Narada Muni. Even in the case of Lord Shiva also, he cursed Lord Shiva that you will not be able to come to the sacrificial ceremonies and accept your sacrificial share. But for Lord Shiva, it turned out to be a blessing for him. Because a devotee like Lord Shiva, he doesn't want to go through this social functions and socializing with the materialistic demigods. So it turned out to be a blessing for him. So therefore, bhakti is the art of turning curses into blessings. So in one class, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj explained that Narada Muni, he accepted the curse of Daksha Prajapati to be a blessing. So because he accepted the curse of Daksha to be a blessing, whenever he would curse somebody, that turns out to be a blessing for him. When he cursed Nalakwar and Manigiri, that curse turned out to be a blessing for him. So therefore, when you accept the curse as a blessing, then you have the, like, when Narada Muni accepted the, when his mother died at a young age, Tada tadagham ishasya bhaktanam sham abhipsatam. He accepted to be the mercy of the Supreme Lord. If he accepted to be a blessing, so therefore whenever he curses somebody, that turns out to be a blessing for others. So here Prabhupada says here, just like Narada Muni has been cursed, I have also been cursed in the parampara system from Narada Muni. So although I have got so many centers, I am not able to stay in one particular center for a long time because I have to keep going to different places. But I have traveled so many times around the world, I cannot stay anywhere for more than 3 days or a week. So I don't mind the curse by the parents of my disciples, but now it is time that I must stay at one particular place and finish the translation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, I request that I want to transfer the curse to my disciples. So that I can stay at a particular place so that my devotees, my disciples can actually travel and then they can take the curse of Narada Muni. I may sit down conveniently in one place for the work of translation. So last verse, we will take the break. Pratijagraha tadbadam Narada sadhu sammataha yetavan sadhu vadohi titikshetesvarasvayam.
Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, "My dear king, since Narad Muni is an approved saintly person, when cursed by Prajapati Daksha, he replied, 'Tad badham,' 'Yes, what you have said is good. I accept this curse.' He could have cursed Prajapati Daksha in return, but because he is a tolerant and merciful sadhu, he took no action."
This verse shows the character of Narad Muni. So Narad Muni, because he is a sadhu sammataha, he is approved by all the saintly persons. He did not take any action, although he had the power to counter curse. But that is the nature of a saintly person, Prabhupada. Yetavan sadhuvada means that he was capable of countering the curse, but he did not because he was saintly. So one may say, why did Narada Muni leave that place when Daksha was blaspheming him? So Narada Muni thought that Daksha is controlled by anger, so let him criticize me. Let him criticize me a lot, let him curse me, and that is the result of anger. But after his anger subsides, he will see that I did not criticize him or curse him in return and tolerated everything. By seeing that, Daksha will start repenting that he has criticized and cursed a devotee of the Lord. Like the Kumaras, in the case of the Kumaras, when they actually became angry with the Jayan Vijay, and then when Jayan Vijay did not actually retaliate, then the four Kumaras, by seeing that, they calmed down and they did not actually, and then their heart melted. So similarly, Narada Muni thought that when I do not retaliate, then Daksha Prajapati's heart will melt and then he will start repenting. And then when he will start repenting, then his heart will become a suitable place for sowing the seed of bhakti. So thinking like that, Narada Muni remained there, not reacting. But what happened was that, even after cursing Narada Muni, even after seeing that Narada Muni did not retaliate, but still Daksha Prajapati did not repent, was not repentant. So when he was not repentant, then Narada Muni was thinking, oh, how powerful are the remnants of the curse to Lord Shiva. How powerful are the remnants of the offense to Lord Shiva. The power of offense to Lord Shiva, the remnants of that offense is that even after acting like this to me, still he did not become repentant, even after seeing that how I did not react. So then thinking like that, then Narada Muni left that place. So here we see that Narada Muni is actually tolerance. So Prabhupada's whole purport is about the tolerance. He says that the real technique for preaching, so many times there are different techniques are given, but the ultimate technique for preaching is Trinadapi Sunichena ತರೋರಿವ ಸಹಿಷ್ಣುನ ಅಮಾನಿನ ಮಾನದೇನ ಕೀರ್ತನೀಯ ಸದಾಹರಿ. ಸೊ ಹಿ ಸೇ ದಟ್ ಎ ಪ್ರೀಚರ್ ಕೆನಾಟ್ ಲಿವ್ ಅನ್ ಈಸಿ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಲೈಫ್, ನೋ ಈಸಿ ಗೋಯಿಂಗ್ ಲೈಫ್ ಫಾರ್ ಅ ಪ್ರೀಚರ್. ಅಂಡ್ ಸಮ್ಟೈಮ್ಸ್ ಎ ಪ್ರೀಚರ್ ಇಸ್ ನಾಟ್ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಕರ್ಸ್ಡ್ ಬಟ್ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ಫಿಸಿಕಲಿ ಅಟ್ಯಾಕ್ಡ್, ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಕೇಸ್ ಆಫ್ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು. ಈ ಇಸ್ ಎಕ್ಸಾಂಪಲ್ ಆಫ್ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು ಅಂಡ್ ಜಗಾಯ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಜೀಸಸ್ ಕ್ರೈಸ್ಟ್. ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು ಇಸ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಹೀ ಎಕ್ಸಿಬಿಟೆಡ್ ದ ಹೈಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಅಪ್ರಿಸಿಯೇಷನ್. ಹೈಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಅಪ್ರಿಸಿಯೇಷನ್ ಹೀ ಸೆಡ್ ದಟ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಇಟ್ ಓಲ್ಡ್ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮಹಾಪ್ರಭು, ಯು ಸಿ ಜಗಾಯ್ ಅಟ್ಯಾಕ್, ಜಗಾಯ್ ಆಕ್ಚುಲಿ ಸ್ಟಾಪ್ಡ್ ಮದಾಯ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಅಟ್ಯಾಕಿಂಗ್ ಮೀ. ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಇಮ್ಯಾಜಿನ್ ಟು ಸೇ ದಟ್ ಇಟ್ ರಿಯಲಿ ರಿಕ್ವೈರ್ಸ್ ಅ ಹೈಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಅಪ್ರಿಸಿಯೇಷನ್. ಬೋಥ್ ಆಫ್ ದಮ್ ಕಮಿಟೆಡ್ ಸೋ ಮೆನಿ ಸಿನ್ಸ್ ಬಟ್ ಈ ಜಗಾಯ್ ಸ್ಟಾಪ್ಡ್ ಮದಾಯ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ ಅಟ್ಯಾಕಿಂಗ್ ಮೀ, ದಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಅ ಹೈಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಅಪ್ರಿಸಿಯೇಷನ್. ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಪ್ರಭು ಆಲ್ಸೋ ಶೋಡ್ ಸಚ್ ಕೈಂಡ್ ಆಫ್ ಟಾಲರೆನ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ನಾರದಮುನಿ ರಿಮೈಂಡ್ ದರ್ ಎಕ್ಸ್ಪೆಕ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ದಟ್ ದಕ್ಷ ವುಡ್ ರಿಪೆಂಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಮಿಸ್ಬಿಹೇವಿಯರ್, wanting to give a chance to Daksha, but Daksha did not actually repent, and therefore Narada Muni was astonished by the powerful nature of the remnants of offense to Lord Shiva. And this was also mentioned by the acharyas in 3.9.12 in Brahmaji's prayer, nati prasidati tato ಪಚಿತೋಪಚಾರೈರ್ ಆರಾಧಿತ ಸುರಗಣೈರ್ ಹೃದಯ ಬಾಧಿತ ಬದ್ಧ ಕಾಮೈ. ಸೊ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಾಜಿ ಇಸ್ ಸೇಯಿಂಗ್ ದಟ್ ಯು ಆರ್ ದ ಫ್ರೆಂಡ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಯು ಆರ್ ದ ನ್ಯೂಟ್ರಲ್ ಸೋಲ್ ವಿದ್ ಇನ್ ಆಲ್ ಬೀಯಿಂಗ್ಸ್, ಅಂಡ್ ಯು ಆರ್ ನಾಟ್ ಆಸ್ ಪ್ಲೀಸ್ಡ್ ಬೈ ಬೀಯಿಂಗ್ ವರ್ಷಿಪ್ಡ್ ವಿತ್ ಮೆನಿ ಐಟಮ್ಸ್ ಬೈ ದ ದೇವತಾಸ್, ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ದೇರ್ ಹಾರ್ಟ್ಸ್ ಆರ್ ಫಿಲ್ಡ್ ವಿತ್ ಮೆಟೀರಿಯಲ್ ಡಿಸೈರ್ಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ಯು. But you are very pleased with the devotees who show mercy to all beings. But although the devotees show mercy to all beings, but the mercy of the devotees is not attainable by the non-devotees. In this way, Brahmaji is saying. So, yes, in regards to that, how the devotees, you are pleased with the devotees who show mercy to all beings, but although some people don't accept the mercy of the devotees. In that connection, the last purport, in that purport, Prabhupada and Vishnu Chakotipad says that, for example, Narada Muni shows mercy to everyone, but when somebody's heart is like a barren field, even though you may sow the seed, then nothing will grow. So even though seeds are sown everywhere, they do not grow in the salty earth. So then he gives the example, one does not see positive results in the mercy that Narada and others gave to persons such as Daksha. Narada Muni, he wanted to give mercy, but Daksha's heart was not repentant, it was like a barren field, so therefore he couldn't show that. So I will take a break here, then we'll continue.
Durga. From Yami came the son named Swarga, whose son was named Nandi. The sons of Biswa were the Biswa Devas, who had no progeny. From the womb of Sadhya came the Sadhyas, who had a son named Arthasiddhi. The two sons who took birth from the womb of Marutvati were Marutvan and Jayanta. Jayanta, who is an expansion of Lord Vasudev, is known as Upendra. The demigods named the Muhurtikas took birth from the womb of Muhurta. These demigods delivered the results of actions to the living entities of their respective times. The son of Sankalpa was known as Sankalpa, and from him lust was born. The sons of Basu were known as the eight Basus. Just hear the names from me: Drona, Prana, Dhruva, Arka, Agni, Dosa, Bastu, and Vibhavasu. From Abhimati, the wife of the Basu named Drona, were generated the sons named Harsha, Soka, Bhaya, and so on. Urjaswati, the wife of Prana, gave birth to three sons named Saha, Ayush, and Purojava. The wife of Dhruva was known as Dharani, and from her womb, various cities took birth. From the womb of Basana, the wife of Arka, came many sons headed by Tarsa, Dhara, the wife of the Basu named Agni, gave birth to many sons headed by Dravinaka. From Kritika, another wife of Agni, came the son named Skanda, Kartikeya, whose sons were headed by Vishakha. From the womb of Sarvari, the wife of the Basu named Dosa, came the son named Sisumar, who was an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. From Angirashi, the wife of the Basu named Bastu, was born the great architect Vishwakarma. Vishwakarma became the husband of Akriti, from whom the Manu named Chakshusha was born. The sons of Manu were known as Vishwadevas and Sadhyas. Usha, the wife of Vibhavasu, gave birth to three sons, Bhishta, Rochisa, and Atapa. From Atapa came Panchayama, the span of day, who awakened all living entities to material activities. So,
That time also Nikruti and the lost trinity, and this lost, what a difference actually?
That is a different thing. In the previous incarnation, this is just a different this is in the name fourth Manvantara, this is fifth Manvantara.
Okay.
So that is in the first Manvantara. Okay. They are different personality, they are different.
And this is 10 Vasu, Bhishma Deva, whose Vasu was for me? Drona.
I don't have more information about this Vasu. Bhishma Deva is one of the Vasu, Uddhava is one of the Vasu. They are eternal associates of the Lord, but sometimes a certain demigod potence also enters.
Kartikeya is son of Lord Shiva, but here it is mentioned, or is it different Kartikeya?
Different personality, actually.
Skanda also written.
Who? Same Kartikeya.
Skanda is a son of Lord Shiva and Parvati. Mentioned as Lord Shiva and Parvati.
Here Agni and
Kri. Some of their personality.
Sarupa, the wife of Bhuta, gave birth to the 10 million Rudras, of whom the 11 principal Rudras were Raivata, Aja, Bhava, Bhima, Bhama, Ugra, Vrishakapi, Ajay Kapat, Ahir Vradna, Bahurupa, and Mahan. Their associates, the ghosts and goblins who are very fearful, were born of the other wife of Bhuta. The Prajapati Angira had two wives named Swadha and Sati. The wife named Swadha accepted all the Pitas as her sons, and Sati accepted the Atharvangirsa Veda as her son. Krishasva had two wives named Archis and Dhishana. In the wife named Archis, he begot Dhumaketu, and in Dhishana he begot four sons named Vedashira, Devala, Bayuna, and Manu. Kashyap, who is also Text 21-22. Kashyap, who is also named Taksha, had four wives, Binata, Kadru, Patangi, and Yamini. Patangi gave birth to many kinds of birds, and Yamini gave birth to locust. Binata gave birth to Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu, and to Anuru or Aruna, the chariot driver of the sun god. Kadru gave birth to different varieties of serpents. O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Bharatas, the constellations named Kritika were all wives of the moon god. However, because Prajapati Daksha had caused him to suffer from a disease causing gradual destruction, the moon god could not beget children in any of his wives.
God was a little partial to the Rogini constellation, ignored the other daughters, other wives. Then Daksha became angry and caused the moon god to suffer from consumption. Then he did not hear his children in their mind. Then moon god retrieved from the curse. Performed the activities and please Lord Shiva. Went to Samadhi Kshetra. Our dynasty has been first to the Brahmana. We should go to Samadhi Kshetra and perform rituals and give charity to the Brahmana. Not in glory to the Samadhi Kshetra, as you mentioned this.
Next verse, 24 and 26. The other 13 wives of Kashyapa, that is described in the 24 and 26.
Thereafter, the king of the moon pacified Prajapati Daksha with courteous words and thus regained the portions of light he had lost during his disease. Nevertheless, he could not beget children. The moon loses his shining power during the dark fortnight, and in the bright fortnight it is manifest again. O King Parikshit, now please hear from me the names of Kashyapa's wives, from whose wombs the population of the entire universe has come. They are the mothers of almost all the population of the entire universe, and their names are very auspicious to hear. They are Aditi, Diti, Danu, Kashta, Arishta, Sursa, Ila, Muni, Krodhavasha, Tamra, Suravi, Sharma, and Timi. From the womb of Timi, all the aquatics took birth, and from the womb of Sharma, the ferocious animals like the tigers and lions took birth. My dear King Parikshit, from the womb of Suravi, the buffalo, cow, and other animals with cloven hoofs took birth. From the womb of Tamra, the eagles, vultures, and other large birds of prey took birth. And from the womb of Muni, the angels took birth. The sons born of Krodhavasha were the serpents known as Dandasuka, as well as other serpents and the mosquitoes. All the various creepers and trees were born from the womb of Ila. The Rakshasas, bad spirits, were born from the womb of Surasa. The Gandharvas were born from the womb of Arishta, and animals whose hoofs are not split, such as the horse, were born from the womb of Kashta. O King, from the womb of Danu came 61 sons, of whom these 18 were very important. Dimurdha, Sambara, Arishta, Hayagriva, Vibhavasu, Ayomukha, Sangsushira, Sarvhanu, Kapila, Aruna, Puloma, Vishvakarma, Ekachakra, Anutapana, Dhumrakesha, Virupaksha, Viprachitti, and Durjaya. The daughter of Sarvhanu named Suprabha was married by Namuchi. The daughter of Vishvakarma named Sarmishtha was given to the powerful king Yayati, the son of Nahush. Vaishvanara, the son of Danu, had four beautiful daughters named Upadanavi, Hayashira, Puloma, and Kalaka. Hiranyaksha married Upadhanavi and Kratu married Hayashira. Thereafter, at the request of Lord Brahma, Prajapati Kashyap married Puloma and Kalaka, the other two daughters of Vaishvanara. From the wombs of these two wives of Kashyapa came 60,000 sons headed by Nivatakavach, who are known as the Paulomas and the Kalakeyas. They were physically very strong and expert in fighting, and their aim was to disturb the sacrifices performed by the great sages. My dear king, when your grandfather Arjuna went to the heavenly planets, he alone killed all these demons, and thus King Indra became extremely affectionate towards him. In his wife Simhika, Viprachitti begot 101 sons, of whom the eldest is Rahu, and the others are the 100 Ketus. All of them attain positions in the influential planets. Now please hear me as I describe the descendants of Aditi in chronological order. As I describe the descendants of Aditi in chronological order, in this dynasty, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, descended by his plenary expansion. The names of the sons of Aditi are as follows: Vivaswan, Aryama, Pusa, Tvashta, Sabita, Bhaga, Dhata, Vidhata, Varuna, Mitra, Satru, and Urukrama. Samgya, the wife of Vivaswan, the sun god, gave birth to the Manu named Shraddhadev, and the same fortunate wife also gave birth to the twins Yamraj and the river Yamuna. Then Yami, while wandering on the earth in the form of a mare, gave birth to the Ashwini Kumaras. Chaya, another wife of the sun god, begot two sons named Saneshwara and Savarni Manu, and one daughter, Tapati, who married Sambarana. From the womb of Matrika, the wife of Aryama, were born many learned scholars. Among them, Lord Brahma created the human species, which are endowed with an aptitude for self-examination. Pusha had two sons. When Lord Shiva was angry at Daksha, Pusha had laughed at Lord Shiva and shown his teeth. Therefore, he lost his teeth and had to live by eating only ground flour. Rachana, the daughter of the Daityas, became the wife of Prajapati Tvashta. By his shemina, he begot in her womb two very powerful sons named Sannivesh and Vishwarup. Although Vishwarup was the son of the daughter of their eternal enemies, the demons, the demigods accepted him as their priest in accordance with the order of Brahma when they were abandoned by their spiritual master Brihaspati, whom they had disrespected.
Daughter of their eternal enemy is the demon. The demigod accepted him as a priest
according to the order of Brahma when they were abandoned by the Guru Prabhupada. He just mentioned that based on their case, among them, Lord Brahma created the human species. Yatra vai manushi jatir brahmana chokakalpi, which are endowed with an aptitude for self-examination. The human form has an aptitude for self-examination.
This Pusha case also happened in the first Manvantara, na? So why, what it is mentioned here.
Pusha Kashyap and Aditi also happened.
First Manvantara only, na? Prachin Varishitva. Pracheta scheme. Daksha.
Daksha performed the austerities for 3 Manvantara. Then he begot this.
About Pusha.
श्रीराज उवाच कस्य हेतु परित्यक्ता
महाराज परीक्षित इंक्वायर फ्रॉम सुखदेव गोस्वामी ओ ग्रेट सेज व्हाई डिड द स्पिरिचुअल मास्टर ऑफ द डेमीगॉड्स बृहस्पति रिजेक्ट द डेमीगॉड्स हु वर हिज ओन डिसाइपल्स What offense did the demigods commit against their spiritual master? Please describe to me this incident.
Why did Brihaspati reject the devatas?
And playing a beautiful section from 7th chapter till the 13th chapter. Almost, I can say 12th and 13th chapter of the Surya Kutrantra. Or chapter of Surya Kutrantra, the 13th chapter. And then 14, 15, 16, 17 is the previous name of the Kutrantra, the Sutra Ketu Mahatmya.
Why is he asking this question?
The previous chapter, last verse, was mentioned that one of the sons of Kashyapa and Aditi is Swasta. And Parshad Maharaj said, Surya Goswami is describing the daughter. And the result is mentioned. Although Vishuddha was the son of the daughter of their eternal enemy, the demon. See, Swasta is a demigod. Swasta is the son of Aditi and Kashyapa. But Swasta got married to a lady, Rachana, who comes from that dynasty of the demons. So Vishwarupa was born to Swasta and Rachana. So although Vishwarupa was the son of the daughter of their eternal enemy, that means the demon, the demigods accepted him as a priest in accordance with the order of Brahma. And Brihaspati had registered in the world. So now we start the narration. Sri Badarayane Ruvacha
Badarayane Ruvacha
Indras Tribhuvanaishwarya
Mato Langita Satpata Marutvir Vasubi Rudrai Adityai Rugubir Nrupa Vishwa Devaitya Sadhyaitya नासत्याभ्याम परिच्छतः सिद्धचारण गंधर्वैर मुनिभिर ब्रह्मवादिभिः विद्याधराप्सरोभिश्च किन्नरैः पथगोरगैः निषेव्यमाणो मगवान् तूयमानश्च भारत उपगीयमाणो ललितम् आस्थानाद्यासनाश्रितः पाण्डुरेणातपत्रेण चंद्रमंडल चारुणा युक्तश्चान्यै पारमेष्ट्यै चामरव्यजनादिभिः विराजमान पौलम्या सहार्दासनया वृषं सयदा परमाचार्यं देवानामात्मनश्च नाभ्यनन्दत संप्राप्तं प्रत्युत्तानासनादिभिः वाचस्पतिं मुनिव्रतम् सुरा सुरनमस्कृतम् नोचाचलाशनादिन्द्र पश्यन्नपि सभागतम्
Sukadev Goswami said, O king, once upon a time, the king of heaven, Indra, being extremely proud because of his great opulence of the three worlds, transgressed the law of Vedic etiquette. Seated on his throne, he was surrounded by the Marutas, Basus, Rudras, Adityas, Ribhus, Vishwadevas, Sadhyas, Ashwinikumaras, Siddha, Charanas, and Gandharvas, and by great saintly persons. Also surrounding him were the Vidyadharas, Apsaras, Kinnaras, Patangas, and Urugas. All of them were offering Indra their respects and services, and the Apsaras and Gandharvas were dancing and singing with very sweet musical instruments. Over Indra's head was a white umbrella, as effulgent as the full moon, fanned by yak tail whisk and served with all the paraphernalia of a great king. Indra was sitting with his wife, Sachi Devi, who occupied half the throne when the great sage Brihaspati appeared in that assembly. Brihaspati, the best of the sages, was the spiritual master of Indra and the demigods, and was respected by the demigods and demons alike. Nevertheless, although Indra saw his spiritual master before him, he did not rise from his own seat or offer a seat to his spiritual master, nor did Indra offer him a respectful welcome. Indra did nothing to show him respect.
Indra, being extremely proud because of his great wealth, the three worlds, basically did not follow the Vedic conduct, he did not follow the Vaishnava etiquette. That's what he said. Indra was being served by Sarvam, glorified by others. But Indra did not rise from his seat on seeing Brihaspati enter the room. Prabhupada says that the fact that he did not rise is mentioned twice in order to make clear his authority. He did not move at all, though seated on his throne. We find many things in the Bhagavatam, many books in the Bhagavatam, they start because somebody not getting up. Even Markandeya Rishi, but especially with respect, Markandeya Rishi, when he comes to meet Lord Shiva, Markandeya Rishi was absorbed in his meditation. He didn't notice Lord Shiva. But Lord Shiva then enters the heart of Markandeya Rishi. But he signed that this is a very important principle of respect. This is a Vaishnava etiquette. Every chapter at the end, Kaviraj Goswami offers respect to Rupa Goswami, Raghunathas Goswami, and Rupa Goswami. So we are doing it every chapter. I think it is not in detail. It is important to indicate the ornament of a the title of this chapter. Said that out in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, the chapter is titled as Indra and Brihaspati. So how would you liken the entire chapter in the Bhagavatam, which will last for the entire eternity, named like that, if you are Indra? So it is a quite a serious. Of all literature, and in that he is mentioning a title as Indra and Brihaspati. So considering the magnitude of what is being said here as a title, Indra and Brihaspati, you would ordinarily think that maybe Indra must have committed a very serious offense. Maybe he might have depicted Brihaspati, or he might have blasphemed him, called him a Roman of food, or accused him for doing some sinful activity. But none of this is happening. What people have seen is neglected to get up for a few seconds. Just neglected to get up to do respect to Brihaspati just for a few seconds. So from there we can understand how this is actually a showing respect is a serious issue. Especially even Maharaj arrived, Vipu Maharaj immediately got up and showed respect to the Lord. Then it is said that when the elders approach, the life years of the young people move upward out of the body. And when you stand up in respect and greet the elders, the life years return to the body. What is the indication that the person does not get up to show respect to the elder, then the lifespan is not. That's the Pratik Maharaj immediately shows respect. These are all very subtle laws.
You know, sometimes it so happens that, you know, they won't expect. You know, they are very humble personalities. They don't expect. And over the time, it becomes like, you know, contempt on our side that they don't want to accept, so we don't do it. Some situations, actually, we take all the situations for granted later on. Some situations, they don't expect. And in certain situations, we have to. And it so happens that, you know, we take it for granted. You know, in
we have to respect. Because they may not expect, but we have to respect. But I understand some situations, somebody is taking the Vyasas and doing it.
That is what happened. Even the, you know, like Rome Arshan Sote was thinking he is sitting on Vyasasan, but you know, Adi Guru came. Thinking was like it becomes like, you know, you get used to it, you know, offensive mentality may creep in a conditioned soul. You know, start thinking himself equal to the senior. You know, such things may creep in. Oh, that is.
Sometimes we also don't want to embarrass a person in a particular circumstance. Parishad Maharaj also, he did not actually go and beg forgiveness from Swami Kaviti. When he heard that bad news, he wanted to go and beg forgiveness, but Prabhupada said he did not go and beg forgiveness because he didn't want to unnecessarily embarrass Swami Kaviti. But his attitude was definitely repentant. So these are certain practical considerations, but the main point is that being proud in that way. Brihaspati could see that, and then Brihaspati is what he does. Tato nirgatya sahasa,
tato nirgatya sahasa,
kavir angirasa prabhu,
kavir angirasa prabhu,
ayayau swagrham tushnim,
ayayau swagrham tushnim,
vidvan srimada vikriyan,
vidvan srimada vikriyan. Brihaspati knew everything that would happen in the future. Seeing Indra's transgression of etiquette, he completely understood that Indra was swept up by his material opulence. Although able to curse Indra, he did not do so. Instead, he left the assembly and in silence returned to his home.
So here, Brihaspati is called as Kavi, he knew the future. Prabhu means he was capable of giving punishment. And Vidwan means he knew the cause of Indra's disrespect. And then, understanding these things, he left the assembly silently and went home. So, the cause of Indra's pride is that Indra had all opulences except renunciation. He had beauty, he had knowledge, he was wealthy, he had power, but he didn't have the opulence of renunciation. So therefore, the sense of detachment. Therefore, he actually offended, he became proud. It is also said that the pride due to wealth causes maximum intoxication. And Indra was also, when he was actually, when Brahmapati came, others were respecting him, others were glorifying him. And when Indra did not get up, others also did not remind Indra, you please get up and show respect to Brahmapati. That's why one of the few verses later, Indra also condemned the other people. They did not correct me only. So sometimes when you are surrounded by only the juniors, people flatter you, then we may get carried away with the flattering and then we may not show respect to other seniors. Once a group of the military officer and the soldiers, they went to the top of a building. The building was on, building caught fire, so therefore they had to jump from the top of the building. So there were other soldiers who were actually standing below and they were holding a net. So then one by one the soldiers actually, they jumped from the top of the building into the net. The last person to jump was that the military officer leader. So when he jumped, other people were holding the net, they actually left the net and to pay salute. In that sense, others respecting you can cause your downfall. Like, we may fail to show respect to our superior, that will cause our downfall. The another thing is that, just like a cashier receives so much of money from the people, but if he thinks that, well, this is my money, they are giving money to me, then he will get arrested. He puts the money in his pocket. But similarly, when people respect us, we always have to understand that respect which they are giving, that they are giving to the parampara, they are giving to the particular position, they are giving to the maybe the saffron dress, or they are giving to the parampara I am respecting, I am representing. So when we take it personally, and then when somebody does not respect, we get offended. So Indra, because he took that, when he was being respected by other people, he got carried away by that. And because he took it personally, he failed to show respect to Brahmapati. Another place, the Bhakti Ratnakar, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, similar description comes. Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they were opulent like Indra. But when somebody would enter that assembly, even if the person is a very ordinary person, ordinary Brahmana, ordinary Vaishnava, ordinary person, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami with great affection would receive that person, respect that person. That's the contrast over here. And Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they were also opulent like Indra, but how they respected others. प्रतिबुद्धेन्द्रो गुरुहेलनमात्मनः गर्गयामात सदति स्वयमात्मानमात्मना.
Indra, the king of heaven, could immediately understand this mistake. Realizing he had disrespected his spiritual master, he condemned himself in the presence of all the members of the assembly.
Five verses, Indra told him,
अगोबतमया साधु कृतं वै दब्रबुद्धिना यन्मयैश्वर्यमत्तेन गुरुसदसि कात्कृतः.
Regrettable deed I have committed because of my lack of intelligence and my pride in my material opulences. I failed to show respect to my spiritual master when he entered this assembly, and thus I have insulted him.
Kovridye pandito lakshmi tripishtapapate rabi yayaham asuram bhavam mitodhya vibhudeshwarah.
Although I am king of the demigods who are situated in the mode of goodness, I was proud of a little opulence and polluted by false ego. Under the circumstances, who in this world would accept such riches at the risk of falling down? Alas, I condemn my wealth and opulence.
He is saying that what an improper deed I have committed because of my lack of intelligence. Adabra buddhina. I have insulted my guru when he entered his assembly because of my pride in wealth. The 12th verse he says that which learned person, Panditaha, would desire the wealth of the king of heaven? And I, being the master of devatas, have become a demon by disrespecting, by failing to respect Brahmaspati. Like he says that nobody would desire the wealth, and which learned person would desire the wealth of the king of heaven? And I have become a demon. When the demigod becomes a demon because of the pride caused by wealth. So humility and pride, one definition of bhakti is that bhakti is the art of transforming material into spiritual. And the most transformative quality is humility. Humility transforms. And on the negative side, the pride is the another. Humility transforms material into spiritual. And similarly, pride also it can actually transform in the negative way. So here, the demigod. Indra is actually the king of all the demigods, but because of the pride caused by wealth, that pride transformed a demigod into a demon. That's what he is feeling. I have become a demon, I acted like a demon because of disrespecting my spiritual master. The pride transformed a demigod into a demon in the behavior. So Prabhupada writes here that therefore Mahaprabhu said that na dhanam na janam na sundari. Mama Janmani, Janmani Ishwari. I don't want wealth, beauty and then happiness, the opposite sex. So when a person is extremely opulent, one becomes degraded, and this is true both individually and collectively. The demigod is situated in the mode of goodness, but sometimes even one who is situated as an exalted position as King Indra, is even if somebody is in a mode of goodness, one falls down because of material opulence. And then he says that this is what is happening in America. America is very materially opulent, but without striving to produce ideal human beings, they advance in material opulence. The result is that the America is regretting the wholesale criminality and are wondering how the America has become so lawless and unmanageable. They try to advance materially, but because they did not encourage the human qualities, now there is so much of lawlessness in America. It is degrading as a result of that. So as stated in the Bhagavatam, Nathe vidu swartha gatim hi Vishnu. Therefore, both individually and collectively, they try to enjoy so-called material comfort and they become addicted to wine and women. The men produced in such a society are less than the fourth class. The result of material opulence without aiming for one's self-interest is that it becomes a society of Varna Sankara. And then finally, in the last paragraph, Prabhupada gives a solution.
solution is that one should take advice from a guru, secondly take to Krishna consciousness, and thirdly divide society into four classes and create first class men. Because currently the society is only filled with the fourth class men, how can they avoid the dangers of a criminal society? So next verse. Yagaparamehyam dishanam adishtam nakanchana pratyusthet iti bruyo dharmam tena param vidu.
If a person says, one who is situated on the exalted throne of a king should not stand up to show respect to another king or a brahmana, it is to be understood that he does not know the superior religious principles.
Because somebody may... Prabhupada gives a different examples of how Krishna showed respect to Narada Muni. Narada Muni came to Dwaraka. Krishna immediately stood up with his officers and ministers to offer respect and obeisances to Narada. So although Krishna is the Supreme Lord, Narada is the Lord's devotee, the Lord observed the religious etiquette. Since Narada was a brahmachari, a brahmana and an exalted devotee, even Krishna, while acting as a king, offered respectful obeisances unto Narada. A civilization in which the people do not know how the representative of Narada and Krishna should be respected, how society should be formed, how one should advance in Krishna consciousness, such a society may be technologically advanced, but it is not a human civilization. There may be technological advancement, is not human civilization. Advanced civilization is basically civilization and teaching how to respect the people. And advanced civilization is the civilization of Varnashram. Yes, at Varnashram, which is the most advanced of the human civilization.
ृष्णाम्यदुर्वचस्तेवैर्मज्यन्त्यक्ष्मप्लवायिव. Fall into ignorance and who mislead people by directing them to path of destruction, as described in the previous verses, are in effect boarding a stone boat, and so too are those who blindly follow them. A stone boat would be unable to float and would sink in the water with the passengers, with its passengers. Similarly, those who mislead people go to hell and their followers go with them.
So in this verse, Indra is showing his anger towards those who gave instructions to him in his assembly. So those who put faith in the words of the fallen souls, who point out the wrong path, sink down like persons riding in a boat made of stone. So here also Prabhupada says that the primary purpose of the human form of life is that Hridayam Adyam Sulabham Sudalam. When directed by a spiritual master, the boat can very easily cross the ocean.
Furthermore, the boat of human life is helped across a favorable bridge to the inception of the Vedic knowledge. So, and such a person does not take advantage that human bhavankar is committing spiritual suicide. So here Prabhupada is talking about the second paragraph of the purport about one should give up the false leaders. False leaders means the stone boat, or one should give up the false followers who are like the stone boat. So therefore we have to understand who are our role models, who are our guides, whom do we actually take inspiration from. So here Indra is actually showing anger towards those who gave instructions in this assembly. So even if this is a beautiful purport, one should not take shelter of any other instructions, for Bhagavad Gita gives direct instructions on how to fulfill the aim of human life. Krishna says, Sarvadharman Parityajya. Even if one does not accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his instructions are so exalted and beneficial for humanity that if one follows his instructions, one will be saved. Otherwise, one will be cheated by unauthorized meditation and gymnastic methods of yoga. Bhagavad Gita purport says, without accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no point in actually reading the Gita like that Prabhupada writes in the introduction. Here he says that even if one does not accept Krishna as the Supreme Lord, somehow if a person follows the instructions of Krishna, still one will be saved. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioned in one place regarding Lord Chaitanya. He says that many people may not accept Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord. So when people don't accept Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord, you don't have to force them to accept Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord. But you just somehow encourage them to follow the process given by Lord Chaitanya with Harinam Sankirtan. And when they accept, follow the process given by Lord Chaitanya, and by following that process, they will experience so much of bliss and they will be inspired from within to accept Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Personality of God. So in that sense, Bhaktivinoda also gives a similar response. You just inspire people to follow the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, follow the method given by Lord Chaitanya, Harinam Sankirtan, and they will be inspired from within to accept Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Lord. So here this purport he says, you inspire people to accept the teachings of Krishna, and by following the teachings, they will be inspired. They will come to the point of accepting Krishna as the Supreme Lord. So then he says that, unfortunately, although the American people are extremely eager to get out of the materialistic chaos, they are sometimes found to patronize the makers of stone boats. That means that they have wrong role models, they actually accept the wrong leaders. So Vishnu Chakrabarti says that if a society is guided by political diplomacy with one nation maneuvering against another, it will certainly sink like a stone boat. The political diplomacy will not fail. People must take the Krishna consciousness to understand the aim of life. अतागम अमराचार्यम अगाधदिशनम द्विजम प्रसादयिष्ये निकट कृष्णात चरणम स्पृशन.
With great frankness and without duplicity, I shall now bow my head at the lotus feet of Brahaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. Because he is in the mode of goodness, he is fully aware of all knowledge and is the best of all the Brahmanas. Now I shall touch his lotus feet and offer my obeisance unto him to try to satisfy him.
Non-duplicity. Acharya to be ordinary. So again, generally, overestimating the guru, underestimating the guru, or overestimating the in his own assembly, and Saraswati, the most powerful spiritual master, understood that in his mind, that he became invisible to Indra and left him, that Saraswati was spiritually more powerful than King Indra. So one thing is that he can find that Indra sincerely repented, although he committed an offense, Indra sincerely repented right in front of him. Carrying up Indra, who was thinking in his way, Saraswati became invisible. Indra wanted to go and offer a gift to Saraswati, but he couldn't find Saraswati. Saraswati, he understood Indra's dependent attitude, but Saraswati did not give an opportunity to Indra so that he can respect him.
Repented, he wanted to beg forgiveness from Saraswati,
But Brihaspati did not make Indra king. Because he wanted to give punishment to Indra more than that is required. Because when you give punishment more than that is required, that is a sign of anger. But nevertheless, in this section, what is being highlighted is